All right, we are back, and from my position, high in a palm tree, looking down at the tsunami waters, moving all sorts of debris beneath me. I hate to point this out, but, well, I have some further bad news. All of the bad things that are currently underway in this country were, well, they could have been predicted, and in fact, they were predicted by a lot of people, us included. Then again, you didn't exactly need a crystal ball for a lot of this stuff, although he disavowed the Project 2025 of the Heritage Foundation. And it looks pretty much like they're following the floor plan that was laid out in that document. Of course, our truth-challenged chief executive denied that knowing anything about Project 2025. Apparently, that was all news to him. Of course, you know, there is a thread of possibility that could be true, given his ability to focus on paperwork and briefings that are given to him. One can imagine it, you know, one can imagine the possibility that he got briefing after briefing on Project 2025 and it just went in one ear and out the other. But in this segment, we're going to have to address a more fundamental issue here, which is, well, how did we get here? How is it that Trump, a man who was impeached twice, a man who faced four serious court challenges, a man who told, 30,000 lies during his first run at being president of the United States, a man who lost more money than anyone else in America over a 10-year period. Anyway, yeah, that guy has been given another four-year term as president of the United States. But you know what? It's possible that this election was tainted. Now, yours truly is hoping that when the current tsunami flows back into the sea, that, you know, I can climb down from the palm tree and start reconstructing things. But that, of course, is a task that's complicated and made much more difficult if it so happens that the right wing, the oil companies, the Christian fundamentalists, the MAGA hat wearing people, the tech bros, the coalition that put Trump back in the White House, if they've learned how to steal elections, well, it's going to be a problem climbing down from that palm tree. But we need to address this issue today. And the person we're going to try and do that with is our friend Greg Palast. We've had Greg Palast on this show many times talking about his investigations. Greg has been talking for years, well, actually for decades, about how it is you can steal elections in this country through the gentle art, or not so gentle art, of vote suppression. We strongly recommend, dear listener, that you check out what Greg has had to say on Tom Hartman's YouTube channel, and for that matter, many other locations. Not as many as he should be receiving, because Greg does good work, and unfortunately the mainstream media just is not that interested in explaining to the public how it is their elections they're not as valid as people would like to think. In his appearance on Tom Hartman and in a lot of other places, Greg Palast makes a statement that Trump lost and vote suppression is what carried the day in our last national election. We were talking to Greg about making an appearance on this very program, but unfortunately for us, he has moved off to Europe for the next month. And given the difficulties of a transatlantic phone interview, I asked if it would be okay if we just aired a clip of his, and he said, you know, we can do what we'd like. He's game, and I'm sure that we will have him return to the program when he comes back from Europe in a month or so. I don't think we could do better at this point than to listen to the man himself and hear what he's got to say about the 2024 election. And for that, Mr. McMillan has a clip for us.
I should mention you are the Guardian New York Times reporter, author of The Best Democracy Money Can Buy. Your latest film is Vigilantes, Inc. And GregPalast.com is your website. Hey, Greg.
Hey, glad to be with you, Tom.
Well, thank you. So who won or who lost the election?
It's real simple. If not for vote suppression tactics, that's a fancy word for shafting people of color out of their vote, young people out of their vote, Kamala Harris would have won 3,565,000 votes. That's the number of voters that were denied the right to vote because they were purged or they were challenged. or they had their provisional ballot thrown out. Let me give you some of the numbers. The reason I'm giving you numbers, and I've waited so long to make this report, is that I have to get the numbers from the government agencies, particularly something we call the Elections Assistance Commission. So people don't realize, I used to be a professor of statistics. I was a forensic economist. This is my specialty, the numbers, which I usually did for attorneys general and the U.S. Department of Justice and other government agencies. And so these are calculations I would do, and I have done for federal courts. So we had, are you ready for this? According to the Elections Assistance Commission, the official numbers, we had 4,776,706 voters purged from the voter rolls wrongly. And I'm not making this up. I had the guys from that work with the Microsoft and Amazon go through every single purge name in two states, Georgia and Wisconsin. We took those two states. And we found, for example, in Georgia, that 198,000 voters, we actually have their names and addresses, were wrongly removed from the voter rolls. And you'll be shocked, overwhelmingly, voters of color. In Wisconsin, almost every voter removed by the purge was either a black voter in Milwaukee or a student in Madison. We had this brand new business this year, of vigilante voter challenges. We talked about that on the air, where for the first time, an individual voter like Greg Palast can say, Tom Hartman does not live in Portland. He shouldn't be allowed to vote. This is new. A third of a million, 317,000 voters were challenged by the beginning of August. NAACP said it was over 200,000 just Georgia alone by Election Day. We had 2.12 million mail-in ballots rejected, and that wouldn't mean anything if it were random. It's not random, Tom. According to the state of Washington, which did a study, you're 400% more likely to have your ballot, mail-in ballot rejected if you're black than if you're white, and Washington state has the least voter suppression of any state in the union. And according to the U.S. Civil Rights Commission, which did a study, they found that the chance of your ballot being rejected, mail-in or in-precinct, is 900% higher if you're black than if you're white. We have over 500,000 votes that were spoiled. That is, they said they couldn't be read. And again, it's very, very racial. We had 1.2 million provisional ballots rejected. People think, you know, they get this, you go in and they say, oh, you've been challenged, you've been purged, or we can't find your name on the rolls here, fill out this provisional ballot. 43% of those ballots, according to the U.S. government, 43% of provisional ballots, and there were about 4 million about 3 million in the last election. 43% of those were thrown in the garbage. Overwhelmingly voters of color. And in fact, if you're black, Hispanic, or Latino, Asian American, the chance you'll be given a provisional ballot is 300% higher than if you're white. We're talking, there's some double counting here. The vote suppression factor is about 2.3%. Again, Kamala Harris would have even won the popular vote, 3.565 million extra votes. She would have won the states of Wisconsin, Michigan, Pennsylvania, and Georgia. These are pretty exacting calculations, Tom. And so she would have won with 286 electoral votes. Again, this is absent if we didn't have a vote suppression Jim Crow voting system. And I'm telling you, I work all over the world on elections, from Britain to Venezuela to Liberia. There's no other nation in the world, except for old apartheid South Africa. I mean, where we have a supposed democracies, where you have this racial, basically Jim Crow apartheid voting system, where you have massive, massive numbers of voters of color lose their vote. Also now, that's kind of widened out to, I found a massive number of young people. Again, that demographic is their voters of color too. The color's blue, because young voters, especially young women, that are targeted for the purges, to be sent to provisional ballots, had their registrations canceled or their votes disqualified, especially their mail-in ballots. NPR found that 1 in 7 mail-in ballots, in the analysis they did, were thrown in the garbage, overwhelmingly, again, by the government numbers, 400% more likely if you're black than if you're white. So this is how Trump won, by racial and other forms of vote suppression. That gave him the election. And unless we restart this a voting rights movement in America, 2028's already decided. It'll be decided by Jim Crow, not by the voters.
All right. That is some of what Greg Palast has to say about election 2024. And we do hope to bring him back on this program in the not too distant future to expand upon that. But I think being that Greg was unavailable this month by virtue of making a trip to Europe, we will do what we can to augment these remarks. I will excerpt here from an essay which is available both on his website, gregpalast.com, and also on the Hartman Report, Tom Hartman's website, entitled Trump Lost, Vote Suppression Won. I know we're repeating some of what you've just heard, but I think it's worth repetition. To quote, Trump lost. That is, if all legal voters were allowed to vote, if all legal ballots were counted, Trump would have lost the states of Wisconsin, Michigan, Pennsylvania, and Georgia. Vice President Kamala Harris would have won the presidency with 286 electoral votes. If not for the mass purge of voters of color, if not for the mass disqualification of provisional and mail-in ballots, if not for the new mass vigilante challenges in swing states, Harris would have gained at least another 3,565,000 votes, topping Trump's official popular vote tally by 1.2 million. Here are the key numbers. 4,776,700 voters were wrongly purged from voter rolls, according to the U.S. Elections Assistance Commission data. No less than 2,121,000 mail-in ballots were disqualified for minor clerical errors, like postage due, signatures that didn't match, leaving out the middle initial. In addition to the 2.1 million mail-in ballots disqualified, at least 585,000 ballots cast in precinct were also disqualified. And of course, when there were challenges to various ballots by these vigilantes that Greg mentions, apparently 1,216,000 provisional ballots is what you get when you're having an issue, I guess, in voting in person. Well, they were rejected. They were not counted. So if you're keeping score on those last three categories, that totals 3.9 million votes that were not counted. To that, we will add in Greg's total of 3.24 million new registrations that got rejected or were not entered on the rolls in time to vote. Add that to our previous total, and we're over 7 million votes that disappeared. Now, we're not sure, and we're going to have to ask Greg Palast how that compares to the 4.77 million voters that were wrongly purged from voter rolls, because I think some of those people got back on the voter rolls. Just not sure about that. Anyway, we need to clarify some of this, but these are startling numbers. In the aggregate, we're talking about over 13 million voters, which, you know, it rings something of a bell because a lot of people kept saying, well, you know, Harris, she fell short by the numbers they were throwing out were something like 11 or 12 million votes from Biden in 2020. So I'm not sure how to put all this together, except to say that these are significant number of votes that were thrown out. Now, Greg Palast has taught statistics. He's pretty good with numbers. And this article has some further little sidebars to it that are quite hair-raising. To quote from the piece, the Palast Investigative Fund in 2020 produced a technical report for a Black Voters Matter Fund on a proposed purge of 153,800 voters in Wisconsin. That was a plan pushed by the Wisconsin Institute for Law and Liberty, a group financed by right-wing billionaires. For Black Voters Matter, we brought our team of location experts who proved name by name that the proposed purge was wildly riddled with errors. Notably, we found that the purge was aimed almost exclusively at African Americans in Milwaukee and students in Madison. The nonpartisan election board agreed with us, allowing those voters to cast ballots, with the result that Biden squeaked by in Wisconsin by 20,600 votes. Now, when it comes to purging voters, Greg Palast outlines a great trick that's been learned by, well, actually both parties, called the poison postcard. Targeted voters are mailed postcards by state election officials. Pallas says, let's remember that the state voting chiefs, secretaries of state, are almost to a one partisan hacks. Voters who don't sign and return the cards, which look like junk mail, will be purged. Now, these cards, which look like junk mail, tend to not get returned. A study in Arizona by the Elections Assistance Commission showed that just 1 in 10 postcards got returned. In Georgia, the vote-saving response was barely above 1%. And, of course, that's the way our partisan voting officials like it, says Greg. Now, for the benefit of the ACLU, Pallas took a deep dive into a couple of states that had purged people. He notes that officials in the state of Georgia purged 198,000 Georgians from the voter rolls because they didn't return the postcard. And in fact, that number cited 4.77 million people nationwide that were removed from the voter rolls. Well, that's because they failed to return the poison postcard. Anyway, in summation, lots and lots and lots of voters. And of course, the danger is this is going to happen again in future elections. And this is where we need to step in and help people that are fighting this. It is absolutely clear that these methods can and surely have swung states from one column to the other. And the public needs to get aroused by this fact. Greg Pallas needs to get a bigger audience. We're doing our part. And we have a sneaking suspicion that as this Trump administration continues to roll out all of its proposals and we see the chaos that ensues, well, this may inspire a backlash against what has allowed this to happen. We certainly hope so. And by the way, we should point out this didn't necessarily happen to someone else. It might have happened to you. We understand there are ways that you can check on whether your vote was counted or not. We need to outline that for you in the future, which we plan to do. You know, we note with some small degree of pessimism that Greg Pallas has been talking about this stuff for decades and not enough has been done to fix the problem. Then again, an awful lot of people are unaware that there even is such a problem. And so if we can at least get the information out that, no, folks, hey, wake up. We got a problem here. Those are worthy efforts. Now, we do think it's very important to note that we're going to no doubt face a barrage of propaganda in the, well, effective immediately, we are being barraged by propaganda, and it's only going to get worse, which is why people like us and other sources out there need to push back against the likes of the Wall Street Journal and other Rupert Murdoch publications, against the likes of, well, the tech bros. We'll get to that in a minute. I was stunned to see in The Week magazine and their issue a few weeks back, their reprinting of some comments in The Wall Street Journal by Peggy Noonan. Does that name ring a bell? Peggy Noonan was a speechwriter for Reagan. She is a right-wing shill. Although I'm not surprised to see this sort of thing being printed up in the Wall Street Journal, it was distressing to see it being spread around in The Week magazine. The point of what Peggy Noonan had to say was the cover-up of President Biden's failing mental acuity was the scandal of 2024, she said. A recent story in this newspaper, referring to the Wall Street Journal, based on interviews with nearly 50 people around the presidency, detailed how Biden's aides and family hid his apparent cognitive decline. Said Noonan, they kept the octogenarian away from the public, limited interactions with his cabinet members on bad days, and because he wasn't at his best in the morning, pushed meetings into the afternoon. Now, you know, yeah, Biden, I'm sure, had decline. To this, I would say, you know, surely Biden did have some issues with not being as sharp as he was when he was younger. But look at what's going on right now with Donald J. Trump. I think it's fair to say that his mental decline is being hidden from the public. And unfortunately, the press is and has been sane-washing him for quite some time. At this point in time, everyone seems to have forgotten about his stellar performance in the debate against Kamala Harris, where he looked like the nut that he is. But boy, oh boy, has the mainstream media decided to just sort of close ranks and cover up for him. CNN has certainly moved to the center. CNN decided to demote their reporter, Jim Acosta, who has not shied away from challenging Trump in the past. For this, he was rewarded by being an attempt to move him to basically the midnight hour. And so he resigned on air. Can you play that clip, Mr. McMillan?
Yes.
I've decided to move on. I am grateful to CNN for the nearly 18 years I've spent here doing the news. People often ask me if the highlight of my career at CNN was at the White House covering Donald Trump. Actually, no. That moment came here when I covered former President Barack Obama's trip to Cuba in 2016 and had the chance to question the dictator there, Raul Castro, about the island's political prisoners. As the son of a Cuban refugee, I took home this lesson. It is never a good time to bow down to a tyrant. I have always believed it's the job of the press to hold power to account. I've always tried to do that here at CNN, and I plan on going doing all of that in the future. One final message. Don't give in to the lies. Don't give in to the fear. Hold on to the truth and to hope. Even if you have to get out your phone, record that message. I will not give in to the lies. I will not give in to the fear. Post it on your social media so people can hear from you too. Reporting from Washington, I'm Jim Acosta.
I had to laugh at the fact that Bloomberg.com was giving Trump, credit for the ceasefire in Gaza on Biden's watch. Writing in Bloomberg, a Mark Champion said, sure, President Joe Biden's State Department crafted the deal, but it was Trump's envoy to Israel, the real estate billionaire Steve Witkoff, who got the Israelis to accept it. Reportedly, Witkoff gave Israeli Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu a stark binary choice: agree to a ceasefire before Trump's inauguration, or alienate the most amenable leader to themselves and their goals ever elected to the U.S. presidency. You know, it's kind of hard to imagine Trump being even more pro-Israeli than Biden was, but I don't know. I don't know whether this helps swing the deal or not. It certainly seems possible that it played a role in it. But again, it was Joe Biden's State Department that crafted the deal, and somehow Bloomberg wants to give credit to Trump. And then there's tech bro journalism. The Miami Herald published an editorial a couple weeks back noting that as President Trump's inauguration took place, a clear picture emerged of what the country's new ruling class looks like. Sitting in a row ahead of Trump's own cabinet was a list of magnates worth more than $1 trillion combined. Among them were Tesla CEO Elon Musk, Meta CEO Mark Zuckerberg, and Amazon founder Jeff Bezos. These tech billionaires all helped Trump. Musk spent $250 million on the election campaign. Zuckerberg allowed right-wing disinformants to flourish on his platforms. And Bezos killed the Washington Post editorial endorsing Kamala Harris. And they now stand to grow even richer under a president who values loyalty and the currying of favors. Of course, Jemima Kelly, writing in the Financial Times, gives some of an explanation for Mark Zuckerberg's spinelessness and opportunism, noting that last summer, candidate Donald Trump warned the Meta CEO that he would spend the rest of his life in prison if Zuckerberg continued to plot against him. That plotting was a figment of Trump's imagination, but seems the threats may have worked. And now that Trump is president, Zuckerberg is doing everything he can to please Donald Trump. Topping the list, shutting down Meta's global fact-checking operation, which was established in the wake of the 2016 election, which we would remind you was a time in which a lot of people pointed out the degree to which Facebook was instrumental in helping Donald Trump win the presidency. But sensing a shift in the political winds, Zuckerberg has now killed off fact-checking and also placed Republicans in senior posts at Meta. This is something, ladies and gentlemen, we should be concerned about. And how about this little incident that took place at the LA Times when a doctor wrote a piece criticizing RFK Jr.? Writing in commondreams.org, Brett Wilkins points out that Dr. Eric Reinhart, a political anthropologist and psychoanalytic clinician, said his piece, which the Times published a week ago, was originally titled RFK Jr.'s Wrecking Ball Won't Fix Public Health. However, Times editors ran the article under the title Trump's Healthcare Disruption Could Pay Off If He Pushes Real Reform. In social media, Reinhardt said, "This is my first time working with the Los Angeles Times, and I expect also my last." To which he added, "A vote for RFK Jr. is a vote for nothing but chaos, the opposite of an essential public systems building I argue for in the op-ed piece, and mass death." Reinhardt added, "Editors edit and control final copy and headlines. I get that. But editing out a very central and timely point minutes before sending it to press, while also assigning a title, an image that suggests an argument entirely opposite to the author's clear intent, is bad." We would add that biotech billionaire Patrick Soon-Shiong, who has owned the LA Times since 2018, prompted a wave of staff resignations and reader subscription cancellations following his issuance last month of an internal memo asking the members of the newspaper's board and opinion writers to take a break from writing about Trump. This comes after Soon-Shiong blocked his editorial board from endorsing former Democratic Vice President Kamala Harris for president, a decision he claimed was based partly on a desire for a more balance in the Times opinion section. Soon-Shiong, who apparently is a physician, wrote on social media, "I had not met Bobby Kennedy until a few months ago. The more I got to know him, I truly believe he has the American public's best interests at heart. I have worried about toxins and the cause of cancer in my entire career. As a physician scientist, I really hope he's confirmed as Health and Human Services Secretary." Anyway, there's so much more we need to talk about, but unfortunately, we are out of time. We plan to hit this again hard in the not-too-distant future, maybe next week, and then move inland and to higher ground to survey what the tsunami is producing in our country and the world. This program was produced and edited by Edward McMillan. Our frequent contributor, Howard McKinney, sent us a text suggesting that, maybe it's time to storm the Bastille, which was, of course, how the French Revolution got started. I don't know, Howard. Maybe it is, maybe it isn't. We'll talk about it. You've been listening to Radio Parallax. I'm Douglas Everett. And Mr. Miller, I think we should go out with a little bit of music apropos to what we've been discussing. In this case, Groucho Marx as Rufus T. Firefly, the new dictator of Fredonia from their classic Duck Soup.
"The last man nearly ruined this place. He didn't know what to do with it. If you think this country's bad off now, just wait till I get through with it. The country's taxes must be fixed, and I know what to do with it. If you think you're paying too much now, just wait till I get through with it. I will not stand for anything that's crooked or unfair. I'm strictly on the up and up, so everyone beware. If anyone's caught taking graft, and I don't get my share, we stand them up against the wall, and pop goes the weasel.
So everyone beware, it's crooked or unfair. Don't understand.